Breaking news, more than 40% of Democrats going against Pelosi's wishes, voting to keep alive a resolution to impeach President Trump. Can Speaker Pelosi keep her party in check? Plus, President Trump claims he's enjoying the fight over his racist tweets, showing no signs of letting up the attacks. So how do his supporters feel tonight? And Bernie Sanders fighting back against his 2020 rivals over health care. Does Sanders' plan to pay for his Medicare for All proposal add up? Let's go out front. I'm Erin Burnett. Out front tonight, the breaking news. The House of Representatives rejecting a bid to launch impeachment proceedings against President Trump. And President Trump declaring victory, telling reporters seconds ago, quote, "We've just received an overwhelming vote against impeachment, and that's the end of it." He went on to call it the, quote, "most ridiculous project." Riding high now over how the whole saga over his racist tweets is playing out.
Do you think you're winning this political fight?
I do think I'm winning the political fight. I think I'm winning it by a lot.
And at least by one measure, he is right. Because even a majority of Democrats voted against impeachment. Democrat Al Green ending around Speaker Nancy Pelosi to force the vote. His resolution was specifically to move ahead on impeachment because of the president's tweets, not because of obstruction of justice or anything related to the Mueller report. No, the tweets. And this vote highlighted the growing schism in the Democratic Party. Speaker Nancy Pelosi making it clear she thinks that this was a big waste of time.
Do you have any concerns that the focus on impeachment today and the votes on the floor related to it could jeopardize Robert Mueller's appearance next week?
No, I think we'll get rid of all this right now.
Pretty dismissive. Get rid of all this right now. Well, she did get rid of it, okay? She wants the focus to be on Mueller's upcoming testimony and his 448-page report, right? She was victorious in the vote. But tonight's vote did show a growing number of Democrats do not like how Pelosi is handling impeachment. They are getting restless. And this wing now seems intent on ignoring Speaker Pelosi's commands, even though Pelosi insists that going for impeachment is playing into Trump's hands.
Don't tell anybody I told you this. Trump, I use his name, okay. Trump is goading us to impeach him. That's what he's doing. Every single day, he's just like taunting, because he knows that it would be very divisive in the country, but he doesn't really care. Just wants to solidify his base.
The president upping his incendiary rhetoric tonight against the four Democratic congresswomen as this continues. Just listen to him before leaving for a rally tonight in North Carolina.
When you look at some of the things they said, they're unthinkable. If somebody else or me or anybody else said things like that, it would be historic.
So look, the president doubling down, tripling down, and sending more and more Democrats to take on Speaker Pelosi, forcing her to try to stuff the impeachment genie back into the bottle. Manu Raju is out front live on Capitol Hill. And Manu, look, this is a vote she didn't want to have happen. It has now put a lot of Democrats in a very tough position tonight.
Yeah, that's right. And a lot of Democrats did not want to go this route because they wanted to wait for the Mueller hearing to take place first. Even supporters of opening up an impeachment inquiry were not comfortable and actually did not support ultimately voting for this impeachment, articles of impeachment that was focused on the notion that the president is a racist, not anything to do with the allegations of obstruction of justice laid out in the Mueller probe. But Al Green, who's a Democrat who pushed this measure, defended this effort, told me just moments ago this is the right thing to do. Erin, he also told me that he's not done pushing this measure. He said that if he's not, I asked him if he's willing to do it again. He said, I don't want to do it again. I hope someone else will do it. But if no one else does it, then I will. And under the rules, any member can force a vote despite the wishes of Nancy Pelosi. And now Green defied the speaker in pushing forward in this. And Green sees this as a, quote, positive development. He told me he's not concerned that the president is portraying this as a big political victory because he says that more and more people are starting to understand the process. 95 Democrats did vote for this resolution. That is more than the amount of Democrats who voted in 2017 and 2018 for impeachment, articles of impeachment. And that time, 58 in 2017 and 66 in 2018, Democrats voted to keep alive an impeachment resolution. So the proponents are pushing one way, to be forced to the House's hand on articles of impeachment. Nancy Pelosi saying, let's do something else. Investigate this president. See what we turn up. Put the brakes on the calls for impeachment. all the while people like Jerry Nadler, the House Judiciary Committee chairman who has privately called for an impeachment inquiry, continue to call for that impeachment inquiry. But at the moment, right now, Democrats are continuing to do what Pelosi wants, even as a growing number of Democrats, want to open up formal impeachment proceedings.
Aaron. Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously she's trying to hold the line here, but she's shedding support, and you can hear the president celebrating that. Manu, thank you very much. And I want to go now to Democratic Congressman Dan Kildee, Chief Deputy Whip of the House Democratic Caucus. And I appreciate your time, Congressman. So look, you voted, I understand, to go ahead with the impeachment proceedings against what Speaker Pelosi wanted. Why?
Well, first of all, I think the president should be subject to an impeachment inquiry. I will say this. The position that many members took was a little more nuanced than as people might think. Many of the members like me who support an impeachment inquiry did not vote did not oppose the tabling motion because they didn't like this particular approach. And I sort of share that. I think what Mr. Green
meaning
did,
you don't like the going ahead with impeachment for as racism as the reason.
Yeah, my view was that this resolution should have been referred to the Judiciary Committee rather than simply tabled. But I share the view that many of my colleagues share, that this is not the approach that we should take. I don't think one member using the privileges of the House should impose a set of impeachment articles on everyone else and ask for a yes or no vote. But having said that, we don't get to vote with footnotes. We have to vote yes or no, red or green. And my view was I would have preferred to see this resolution referred to the Judiciary Committee so that we can commence an impeachment inquiry and then open up to, right, I think, much more significant misdeeds by the president, those outlined in the Mueller report.
So I understand. So you're saying, okay, because of the Mueller report or obstruction of justice, that's where you see the reason for impeachment. So you vote okay, even though you don't support Al Green's reason for impeachment. But I just want to be clear, Congressman Kildee. Do you think fundamentally President Trump could be impeached for being racist?
No. I mean, I think we can object to that racism, and we took a very strong stand on it yesterday. But I think if we're going down the path of impeachment, which I support, it should be for these very clear violations that we see in the Mueller report.
Okay, so Al Green, as you heard, just spoke to Manu a few moments ago. And one of the things he said, Congressman Kildee, was, quote, in my opinion, we got 95 votes this time, 66 the last time. So that's a plus. Does he have a point? I mean, Speaker Pelosi wanted this to fail, and yet the numbers keep going in the other direction. And I know you're saying a lot of people had different reasons for getting there, but a heck of a lot more people are getting there, as in yes on impeachment proceedings, Congressman Kildee, than a year ago or before that. So is she losing support?
Well, I don't really see this as being something for or against what the speaker, is looking for. We all have to think for ourselves, and particularly on a case like this, we have to make our own judgments. But I'll put it this way. Support for an impeachment inquiry is clearly growing in support. There are many members who did not vote against the tabling motion who support impeachment. So the number has grown much more than from just 66 to 95. There, I think, is really significant support to go down this path.
A lawmaker who was inside a House Democrats meeting today told our Dana Bash that there was a discussion on internal polling among Democrats. And the message was, this impeachment thing is not working. There's frustration. There's frustration with the four Democratic congresswomen who in the meeting was the perception they're sort of pulling the party in this direction. But they're saying, look, the internal polling shows that is not what voters overwhelmingly want. They want to focus on infrastructure and other things. Are you concerned? And are you concerned that the squad or others are pulling your party too far down the impeachment hole?
Well, I think we actually have to be able to do more than one thing at a time. And this is why I think getting the Judiciary Committee moving on an inquiry would free the committees that have jurisdiction over infrastructure, over health care, to really focus on that agenda. I think that concern is legitimate. And when we go to the American people during the recess, we have to be able to talk about the issues that affect them at the kitchen table every single day. But that does not mean we get to ignore our constitutional obligation. And I don't think we should poll test the Constitution. I think we have an obligation to follow it. And in this case, I think it is taking us to a place where we have to enforce the Constitution on this president, whether it polls well or not.
So, as I mentioned, the president's very clear. This is a win for him tonight, the vote, as he sees it. And this entire imbroglio with the four congresswomen is a boon for him. Here's what he said today.
I do think I'm winning the political fight. I think I'm winning it by a lot. The Democratic Party is really going in a direction that nobody thought possible. They're going so far left, they're going to fall off a cliff.
Do you have concern about that?
Look, no, I don't. I mean, we have an agenda that's very clear around health care, around growing wages, around cleaning up government that we continue to pursue. That's what the American people want. But if there's anyone that I'm going to take political advice from, it's a very long list. And at the very end of that list is Donald Trump. He's just not a credible observer of what's happening in American politics. It's kind of a strange thing to say about the president of the United States, but I just don't listen to what he says that often anymore.
All right, Congressman Kildee, I appreciate your time. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
And next, President Trump about to speak at that rally in North Carolina. It is a must-win state for him, and he's putting time in. Will this give him the edge in 2020? Plus, the battle lines drawn over health care. Bernie Sanders taking on his critics unafraid. Do voters, though, really want what Sanders is selling? And Van Jones tonight goes to the crucial state of Pennsylvania to find out what voters think about Trump's racist tweets. And what Van has found in the past day is going to surprise you. Looking at live pictures out of North Carolina, President Trump about to speak at a campaign rally for his 2020 reelection bid. You see the vice president there speaking. Trump about to take that podium as he continues to defend his attacks on former Democratic congresswoman of color, but denies relishing the entire feud. Men and
women. I'm not relishing the fight. I'm enjoying it because I have to get the word out to the American people. And you have to enjoy what you do. I enjoy what I do. That's not where our country wants to be. We're not going to go, and we're not going to be a socialist country. It's not going to happen.
I guess enjoying and relishing are perhaps not exact synonyms. Caitlin Collins is out front at the rally in Greenville. Caitlin, look, you have spent some time today talking to the people who are there, who waited in line to hear this president, his supporters. How do they feel about his attacks on the Democratic congresswoman?
Of the president's supporters here in the arena tonight. People have been waiting hours for the president, and you really saw what a divide there is in between Washington and here, and over that reaction to the president's tweets on Sunday, where he told those four Democratic congresswomen to go back where they came from, even though most of them were born in the United States. And frankly, a lot of the president's supporters that we spoke with said they did not see those attacks as racist at all. They said actually they agreed with the president and his sentiment that if you don't love the United States, you should go home. Even when they were faced with what those women had said in that interview, which is that they did love the country, they were just trying to make changes. But what you essentially saw was them saying, actually, no, they think it's those congresswomen who were the racists, not President Trump. And they made very clear they support how he came out of all of that. But Aaron, of course, we should note that these are supporters of the president. And there was a big divide in Washington between Democrats and Republicans and the White House over the reaction to the president's comments. But the real question and what the campaign is going to be looking for is how those more moderate or undecided voters react to the president's comments.
All right. Thank you very much, Caitlin Collins. There, of course, as you can hear the president taking the stage. Out front now, Scott Jennings, who was a special assistant to President George W. Bush and former senior spokesperson for Hillary for America, Karen Finney. So, Karen, you heard Caitlin. Look, you know, his people who go to his rallies are going to support what he says. Sure. But if the president's strategy was to use these attacks, not just because they're going to agree with him, but to energize them, to get them ready to go turn out and vote for him, it clearly appears to be working.
Well, absolutely. And we knew all along that this was going to be his strategy for 2020. It's exactly what he did in 2016, where he mainstreamed the alt-right from the beginning, which is part of this sort of very far-right, dangerous kind of hyperbolic rhetoric. And the thing is, though, these four women represent change in America. They represent very different communities, different parts of our country. Like myself, we are just as American as anybody else, but we have different types of American stories. But we're all part of the American story. That's not the vision that Trump is putting forward. His vision says those people you should be afraid of because they're going to take away everything you love. They're going to take away jobs. They're going to do, you know, they're violent. They're, you know, murderers and what have you. And so, of course, it is in his interest to stoke that back up, stoke up that hate, stoke up that rage. And I got to tell you, on some of this, I'm not surprised because a number of the Trump supporters, it's kind of already baked in. They don't know what it's like to be a black person in America and get told to your face as a six-year-old, go back to Africa. So he knew what exactly what he was doing. He took the political opportunity, and here we are.
Scott, I mean, you know, whether it works or not, and clearly, if the goal is to motivate his base, at least right now in this short time frame, it is working. Are you comfortable with him, you know, telling, people of color, brown and black, to go back where they came from, to the country they came from when they're born here in the United States of America?
What I think the president is doing is trying to take the attention off the presidential candidates and put the attention on people in the Democratic Party that he thinks are going to give him the brightest line between his message and what he wants to run against.
This whole socialism thing.
Yeah, he wants to run against the socialist, the radical change, you know, the policies that the four women represent. He thinks this gives him the best chance to not just hold his base together. We talk a lot about the base, but for the people who, you know, maybe are a little bit center right, that maybe they stuck with him last time, maybe they didn't, but maybe they're not comfortable with such radical economic change in the country. I think making them, and look what's happened this week. Where's Kamala Harris? Where's Joe Biden? Where's Mayor Pete? They're not on TV. The people who are on TV this week are the Squad and Nancy Pelosi, who's trying to hold them back. And so that's frankly,
he's
winning the tactical battle.
Okay, that's an interesting point. And Karen, to that point, right, that he's trying to say they're going so far left, they're going off a cliff, and trying to define the party by those four congresswomen, as opposed to by the people who are running for president. Here is one of them, one of the four women, Ayanna Pressley, this morning talking about President Trump. Here she is.
We can talk about and spin out on about hateful words, which are a predictable prompt by the occupant of this White House. And I call him that not because I don't have respect for the Oval Office.
But it sounds like you don't have respect for the Oval Office when you call the President of the United States the occupant.
No, because he is only occupying the space. He does not embody the principles, the responsibility, the grace, the integrity of a true president.
So, Karen, is that a problem to you have someone saying, I won't even call President Trump the president?
No, not at all. Frankly, a lot of Americans have done that from day one, frankly. And unfortunately, time and time again, this president has shown a real lack of understanding, of grace, of appreciation and respect for the office of the presidency.
But do you think Democrats want to be defined by people who hold public office who refuse to call the president the president? Is that who they want to be defined by?
But that's not who we're defined by. That is a media narrative. That's not who we're defined by. I mean, the president doesn't get to decide who defines the Democratic Party. I mean, you know, Dan Kildee, who you just had on, is part of the Democratic Party. John Lewis is part of the Democratic Party. I mean, these four women represent a part of the party. And I think, you know, also remember what he's doing. Remember that Ilhan Omar, she didn't realize that what she had said was a racist trope, an anti-Semitic trope. When she realized that, she apologized. We've never heard that from President Trump. And the other issues that these women are working on, gun safety measures, helping people with credit card issues. My point is, you can't just cherry pick who they are and what they're about and say that's what the party's about.
I hear you. But I have to say, if you're going to come out and say you won't call the president, you can say a whole lot of really substantive, thoughtful things. And people are going to hear that louder than anything else. They just are. We all know that. And Scott, you smile because that is mana to the Republican ears, certainly to this president's ears.
Absolutely. Look, when Barack Obama was president, I called him President Obama. I call Nancy Pelosi Speaker Pelosi. I think, you know, call me old fashioned, but I tend to respect people who've won elections and who have been bestowed these responsibilities. But if you want to roll that beautiful bean footage and let them fight over whether we're going to call Donald Trump the president or not, that's fine, because that's not going to sound reasonable to the average American voter in middle America. And remember, all Donald Trump has to do is win the states he won last time and can even lose a couple of them to retain the White House.
On that point, I want to ask both of you about this, because he is focusing like a laser on states he won, but barely so, right, Karen? I mean, ones that are just so close. He's name-dropping these swing states every single time he can to say, look, I care about them. Campaign rallies like the one he's at right now, he is making sure everybody knows what he's focused on.
Right. You know, look, and here's the problem. Trump has not in any way, shape, or form grown his electorate, grown his base, right? When the way you win elections in this country, you have to figure out who are your voters, and then you got to usually grow that electorate. If anything, and you talked about this with Caitlin, he's probably shrinking, because we know those independents and those Republicans who last time were kind of 50-50, not sure, now they know, you know, Kellyanne Conway likes to say, what offends me is not what affects me. And that's kind of their, that was their strategy around some of the offensive things that Trump would say. I think the difference this time is that people understand that it does affect you if the president creates a divisive climate in this country or, you know, is at war with our you know, with yeah. NATO and our friends. So I think it's going to be different this time.
Scott, let me just play him because I want everyone to hear it.
Michigan and Ohio, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida.
Florida, North Carolina, South Carolina, Ohio.
Ohio to Pennsylvania to North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida. And what's the name of this special place? It's called Wisconsin.
That's where he's going to spend all his time, Scott. Literally just keep saying again and again and do those states.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, all he has to do is win what he won, and he can even lose a couple of them and still hold the White House. I don't necessarily agree that he's actually has a shrunken base from last time. If you look at some of the polling that's come out recently, he had his highest number ever in the ABC News Washington Post poll
40%.
Just a few days ago. So I actually think he's right to strategize on focusing on the coalition of states that delivered him the White House. And again, it's on Democrats to take the states away, and he can lose a couple and still win. He may lose one or two of them, but that won't take the White House away. So I would expect him to campaign in these close states. Look, North Carolina is going to be a close state, and I'm glad he's there tonight.
All right. Thank you both very much. And then Bernie Sanders saying his health care plan could end up costing $40 trillion. So you got to give the guy credit. He's putting a massive number out there. But the big question is, how is he going to pay for it? Plus, Van Jones traveling to Pennsylvania, and he's talking with Americans who say they're standing by Trump despite the racist attacks.
You're like a young black dude with tattoos and stuff. Why do you support Donald Trump, given some of his, you know, racially inflammatory rhetoric?
Tonight, the fight for 2020. Bernie Sanders firing back against Democratic candidates criticizing his Medicare for All plan.
I hear over and over again from political opponents, from the industry, it can't be done. Please do not tell me that 55 years later, with all of the technology that we have, that we cannot simply over a four-year period expand a successful program that is 55 years old.
Out front now, the senior advisor to the Bernie Sanders campaign, Jeff Weaver. Jeff, good to talk to you again. So,
hi, Erin.
Look, you know, Bernie Sanders, I give him a lot of credit because he comes out with a big idea and he comes out with a big price tag and he's not afraid or trying to obfuscate a beat around the bush about it. Okay, so you guys have acknowledged this is going to cost a lot of money. Sanders himself told the Washington Post that it's going to cost up to $40 trillion, which is double the size of the entire American economy. So Joe Biden's plan is like, I don't even know, not $750 billion over a decade. So you, we are totally different things. So
this plan is over a decade, too.
Okay.
Let's be clear.
Okay. How do you sell voters on this?
Well, how you sell voters on this, Erin, is we're going to do away. We already pay the money that we're talking about for this program. We already pay. You pay for it in your taxes for public employees and for Medicare. You pay it in premiums. You pay it in co-payments. You pay for it in lost wages because your employer is paying some of your health care costs. We're going to aggregate that money. And when you do that, that allows you to do a few things. First of all, you can drive down the cost of prescription drugs by 50% in this country by pricing them the way they are priced in other countries for the same product from the same factories. You can also eliminate all of the bureaucracy and waste of millions of dollars in CEO compensation packages at private health insurers, all the bureaucracy that's created to keep you from getting the health care that you've paid for. You aggregate that money and you can provide health care to every person in this country, comprehensive health care, for less than we're spending now. We're going to save $2 to $5 trillion. The question is not how can you afford this? How can you afford what we're going to have otherwise? And every other candidate, whether it's Joe Biden or Kamala Harris or anybody else, they just want to throw more money into this problem without dealing with the structural dysfunction in the healthcare system.
I understand what you're saying, and you got to think big. But I mean, you just take companies. One little thing that you just said there, Jeff, right? They just got a big tax cut, and we were told that that was going to go into wages, and it didn't. So now it's saying, oh, they're going to save money on healthcare, and that's going to go into higher wages. Call me dubious.
Well, there are ways to enforce that. let's be clear, right? If that's your interest. The truth of the matter is that the Republican tax bill was always designed to be a giveaway to big corporations and to wealthy people. Trump has really no interest in working class people getting a wage increase. Let's be clear about that.
All right. So Kamala Harris has said that as part of her Medicare for All plan, there's going to be no middle class tax hike. And I understand you're saying, OK, there might be, but it's going to get you're going to save money in other ways. So it's not really that. But she's saying absolutely not. She spoke exclusively last night to Ahr Kyung Law on this show. And here's what she said.
Now, Senator Sanders says that that is impossible to achieve without a middle class tax hike.
I'm not prepared to engage in a middle class tax hike. The rules have been written against middle class and working families for far too long, and it is not necessary that they be taxed even more.
What do you say to Kamala Harris?
Well, what I say to Kamala Harris is the average American family is going to be saving $3,000 a year in total health care expenditures. You know, Aaron, if you paid $200 for your electric bill and I can now provide it to you for $150, am I taxing you $150 when I've just saved you $50? Of course.
So you're saying the tax increase is going to be less than the savings?
Absolutely. 100%.
And it's cash to cash?
Absolutely. And the reason for that is that we're wringing out all of this fraud and waste and abuse that is driven by the fact that you have a health care financing system. And we're not talking about this is a health care insurance program, national health care insurance program.
Yeah.
This program is going to do away with the bureaucracy and all of the overpayment to health executives and to pharmaceutical company executives. That's what we got to wring out of this system. Actually, we're going to be able to pay health care providers better, frankly.
All right. So Emory University Chair of Health Policy Kenneth Thorpe says the tax hikes are going to be enormous. He was saying you're going to have sales tax increases to get to your $30 to $40 trillion. People on Medicare and Medicaid are going to stay more in taxes than their current premiums. Small business owners currently not paying premiums are going to start paying more. And the list went on and on and on.
Right. Even a conservative economic think tank who's analyzed Medicare for All says the country will spend less on health care under Medicare for All than if we don't go in that direction. So the economics of this are quite clear. The question is, do people have...
Then why do you say there's a cost of $40 trillion? I mean, I'm just trying to get around it even politically, right? If you're saying we're going to save money, why is the number you're acknowledging that it's going to cost $40 trillion? You should be putting out it's going to save $5 trillion.
Well, we do put that number out. You know, that's not the number that folks choose to highlight our opponents. What they want to say is that this is a big increase in spending.
I mean, I'm just saying Sanders did tell The Washington Post it could cost up to $40 trillion. Yeah, so I'm saying he himself said this.
Of course, as a federal expenditure. But in terms of national expenditure on health care, it'll actually be less than what we'll spend otherwise. And it is a savings for the economy.
Jeff, before we go, our new CNN poll of New Hampshire shows Joe Biden at 24%, Warren and Bernie Sanders both at 19%. So they're within the margin of error for Joe Biden. Can Biden win this race by trying to divide and conquer between your candidate and Senator Warren?
No, I don't think that he can, frankly, and I'll tell you why. When you analyze all the public polling, and obviously a bunch of us have private polling as well, what you see is that Bernie Sanders, a coalition of voters, is much more diverse than Elizabeth Warren's. It is much more working class, and he can put together that type of coalition, which is unique. We're going to bring in a lot more voters this time that are not being screened out in these polls the way we did last time when we brought out an additional 55,000 people in Iowa over what was expected by the pollsters. So, you know, Bernie Sanders appeals to a lot of folks who aren't usually counted. They're usually counted out and left out. And that's what this campaign is going to do on the ground in New Hampshire and Iowa and other places.
Jeff Weaver, I appreciate your time. Thanks.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And next, Van Jones travels to the key state of Pennsylvania talking to voters. Voters who voted for Trump and what now? Could what he found spell trouble for Trump or not?
A lot of my friends that are black conservatives, a lot of them have jumped off the Trump train.
Plus, we now know who is in and who's out when it comes to CNN's upcoming Democratic debate. Tonight, the battle for Pennsylvania. So it's a must win, right? President Trump won Pennsylvania by less than a percentage point last time around. And look, got to pull it off this time, pretty much almost for sure. So how do voters there feel about him right now and those racist tweets? Van Jones was just there today, this morning, and he found out.
Show of hands, who voted for Donald Trump in 2016? Raise your hand. Two. So let me focus on you. Two. Are you planning to vote for Donald Trump in 2020?
Well, I haven't made up my mind yet whether I was going to vote for him or not. I am leaning more towards him than I am the other candidates right now. The economic situation for me and my business is going very well. So, that, you know, economics is a big, important issue here.
Gotcha. And what about you?
Yeah, I am. All this kind of this far left talk is kind of scaring me when it comes to the border.
So let's just address the elephant in the room. You're like a young black dude with tattoos and stuff. Why do you support Donald Trump, given some of his, you know, racially inflammatory rhetoric?
Yeah, well, I think so. Look, I mean, I was raised in a conservative family, and I'm in business. I'm a business consultant, and business is great. I don't want to lose that, you know, and I know that, you know, a lot of the rhetoric that comes out of the White House off Twitter is concerning, but putting personal feelings aside, I think that we're having a great economic boom. I mean, people are risking their lives to come here.
How do you size up this whole thing where where President Trump comes out and says to these women, go back to whatever country you came from?
It's a man in desperation. Hmm? He's desperate.
Desperate what?
To be president, the only person he cares about is himself. He rode in on the coattails of Obama. If you think it was any other thing, you know, you believe in the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus. That's the way I see it.
I don't believe in the Easter Bunny or Santa Claus.
Almost everyone has a story of being told, go back to your country. And I think that it's kind of like one of the oldest, you know, tricks in the book when it comes to phraseology, maybe outside of the N-word, that comes to mind when you're talking about racist language.
I've had people, when I moved into Pennsylvania, said, oh, you're a New Yorker. Why don't you go back to New York where you belong? Well, you know, those are just human emotion remarks, and people are frustrated. And they are frustrated, and he's frustrated from the very beginning. They have attacked him, his family, his wife, his kids. It's disgusting. It really is.
I just go back to values. I value treating people with dignity. And if there's anything that is incongruent with those values, then I'm not for that. And so I'm not going to put profit over my values.
You putting your profit over your values?
That would be a yes.
I think that this go back comment hit a lot of us that support him. It hit a lot of us in the gut. And I think that the president is putting a lot of us in a very precarious situation. I think the president has a base, and he has a far right wing base. And there's a lot of white nationalists, a lot of racists, a lot of anti-Semites in that base. So what I'm going to do is I am going to have a PR strategy that is going to rile up the base. And so I feel like a lot of us feel like, wow, like where do we fit in, you know, anymore? Are we still welcome in this movement? Are people of color still welcome? So a lot of us are still reeling from that comment. And I will tell you, a lot of my friends that are black conservatives, a lot of them have jumped off the Trump train. They've gone over to Kamala Harris's side. They've got involved in her campaign, and also Joe Biden's, certainly here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Oh, that was an incredible conversation.
Yeah.
So he's saying a lot of his friends have gotten off, not just conservative, right, onto not just off the Trump train, but onto someone else's train.
Other things.
But amazing that he's saying, I'm not sure if I'm welcome here, and mm-hmm. and if anyone of color is welcome, but he's still voting for him as of now.
Yeah, listen, I mean, I don't think I understood until I got there the way this thing has landed like a bomb. This for those kinds of Trump voters. Trump voters who basically, he said, look, I'm a business guy. My business is going great. I don't want to change. I'm scared. I'm an economic guy, but I'm African-American. And, you know, this last round has pushed some of his fellow black conservatives away. And so I think we got a lot going on here in these swing states. I want to go back.
I really do, too, especially that other guy who said, oh, I was told to go back to New York, which, you know, just doesn't understand. All right. Thank you very much, Van. And you can see more of that conversation on The Van Jones Show Saturday at 7 o'clock. And next, Senator Kamala Harris surging in her home state of California. So could this spell trouble for Joe Biden? Plus, Jeannie Most on Trump's go-to line when it comes to at least a few of his favorite things. Plus, tonight, it's a very special night in our nation and, frankly, much bigger than that, the entire world's history. 50 years ago. Today, during this hour, the astronauts who were soon to be the first people to walk on the surface of the moon began their first color telecast from space. Here's how it's captured in our film Apollo 11.
Goldstone reports they're receiving TV from the spacekraft.
Calling in from about 130,000 miles out.
Hello there, sports fans. You got a little bit of me, but Neil's in the center couch and Buzz is doing the camera work.
Yeah, Neil's standing on his head again. He's trying to make me nervous.
All right, you copy, and we see the disky flashing with a 651.
We do have a happy home. There's plenty of room for the three of us.
Apollo 11 is presently 131,000 nautical miles from Earth.
The spacecraft slowly rotates to maintain thermal balance.
It looks like we got a good PTC going. It's good night from the white team, over.
Okay, see you tomorrow. Thank you for everything.
Good morning, Apollo 11.
Good morning, Houston, Apollo 11.
The CNN debates are just 2 weeks away, and now we know who made the cut. The DNC confirming. Just read it really, really fast, people. There's 20 of them still taking the debate stage. The new face, though, is the Montana governor, Steve Bullock, who will take Eric Swalwell's spot because Swalwell got out of the race. Out front now, Patrick Healy, New York Times politics editor and CNN political analyst. Did I leave it up long enough for everyone to read every name? Okay. Look, there's still a lot of people on the debate, yeah, and it's going to start pretty soon after that, I'm going to bet, to thin out a little bit. Okay. So who are you watching the closest for this one?
It's definitely going to be Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. I mean, I think they created the big change dynamic in the last debate. Biden, because he didn't seem to know or sort of grapple with how to respond to Kamala Harris. And Harris, because the reality is she had a one very scripted, well-rehearsed moment that gave her like $3 million in fundraising, poll breakthrough. The question is, can she capitalize it? Because you know some of the moderators are going to be pressing her on details about what she actually stands for. Mm-hmm. And also the question is, you know, can she come into a debate and create another moment for herself that isn't simply a scripted wind-up moment?
Right, and that, of course, is the big challenge. Look, she's getting some good news in her home state of California. So we've got a new poll, 23% statistically. She's ahead. Statistically, it's a dead heat because of the margin of error. But back in April, Biden was ahead in California. Now, you could say, oh, it's her state. She should be doing well. Or you could say, oh, he was winning, and now she seems to be rising. What's the way to look at it?
Yeah, it's definitely a mixed bag for Biden. This poll matches some of the others that have brought him down in numbers since the debate, since that wobbly debate performance. But an interesting thing is Biden is still far away ahead of the rest of the field in terms of who do you think can beat President Trump in the general election. Mm-hmm. That still goes to name ID, but that also still goes to a general sense among Democrats. Yeah, comfort, and also not sure what Warren or Harris, how they could really...
Quickly, before we go, we just got the soundbite in from the president's rally. It used to be lock her up, and now there's a new rallying cry. Send her back, obviously referring to the congresswoman.
Yeah, I mean, President Trump's racist...
Who is an American citizen.
Right. The racist tweets have clearly broken through to the biggest true believers in the Trump base who are ready to turn out and, you know, come up with a chant that just goes deeper and deeper into how our politics have so changed that racism is expressed, but someone who's a United States citizen can become a rallying cry at a rally. Just very disturbing.
All right. And next, Jeannie Most on President Trump making his feelings known on everything from Biden to Bitcoin.
I'm not a fan. I was not a fan of his. I'm not a fan.
Tonight, Trump is a fan of some things, but there are some exceptions. Here's Jeannie Most.
President Trump is the opposite of a fanboy, obsessively not being a fan. The other day, it was Guatemala and Honduras.
I'm not a fan.
Before that, it was Jeffrey Epstein.
I was not a fan of his, that I can tell you.
And before that, it was the British ambassador who called President Trump inept in leaked cables.
We're not big fans of that man.
From Joe Biden.
So, I'm not a fan.
To Bitcoin.
President Trump says he is not a fan of Bitcoin.
It doesn't bother him a bit to use the word fan to distance himself, even from the Vietnam War.
Well, I was never a fan of that war, I'll be honest with you.
And the president isn't shy about saying he's not a fan to the face of the person he's not a fan of. For instance, when NBC's Peter Alexander stood up for CNN's Jim Acosta...
He's a diligent reporter.
Well, I'm not a big fan of yours either, so...
I understand.
To be honest.
When designer Tom Ford said he wouldn't be dressing Melania...
She's not necessarily my image.
He got unfanned.
I'm not a fan of Tom Ford. Never have been. I was never a fan of John McCain, and I never will be.
Though one of McCain's good friends fanned the flames, tweeting... Okay, you aren't a fan. One more in a long list of things you are not. Honest, brave, smart, etc. And while it's usually humans like Samuel L. Jackson that get not a fan, first wife Ivana Trump wrote that Donald was not a dog fan.
How would I look walking a dog on the White House lawn? Would that be...
But there are a few things that President Trump is a fan of.
I'm a big fan of Winston Churchill.
He's a big fan of the American women's soccer team, if not Megan Rapinoe. He's a big fan of history.
I am a big fan of Hindu, and I am a big fan of India. Big, big fan.
These are a few of my favorite things.
Though they seem vastly outnumbered by non-favorites.
I'm not a fan.
Jeannie Mo, CNN.
I was not a fan of his, and I never will be.
New York.
I'm a fan of Hindu. Thanks for joining us. Anderson starts now.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
You can now watch CNN's Five Things on Max. Each weekday, Kate Baldwin breaks down the five essential news stories in 5 minutes or less. She'll get you up to speed and on with your day. CNN's Five Things with Kate Baldwin, streaming weekdays exclusively on Max.